We're talking about artificial creativity in this hour. And here's my question. When a computer program fixes a writer's novel or improvises a few bars of music, is that real creativity? I mean, even the smartest learning program is still just doing what humans programmed it to. Blaise Aguera y Arcas is a tech visionary at the forefront of artificial intelligence. He currently leads Google's Machine Intelligence Group in Seattle, where he brings together artists and engineers. He tells Steve Paulson that the newest deep learning models really can go beyond what they've been taught.
Yes, I think they can. Actually, before I answer, I should say, though, that when you talk about rules, I think that that kind of critique or that kind of analysis applies a lot better to what some of us now call GoFi, good old-fashioned AI, you know, the so-called AI of the 80s and 90s. You know, the programmer writes a bunch of rules and the computer carries out the procedure, follows this or that branch in the decision tree. And a system like that can never surprise you. You know, it really is just the playbook or the rule book that the programmer generated.
Right.
That's not how these modern systems work at all. What's really interesting about the modern systems is that they start off as these disorganized neural networks. So a bunch of model neurons wired up in a random way. And then they learn from example. And as you teach examples, they do develop concepts. They do develop understanding of some sort. And I think that that one can use that term in a legitimate sense. And you know, I'm not by any means saying that they're conscious or that they, you know, have ideas or that they are creative. But I am definitely saying that surprise is possible with a system like that.
Are you then saying that these very advanced machine learning computers, that they've developed their own sense of aesthetics?
I don't think that you could call it aesthetics, no. I mean, aesthetics implies preferences and it implies an artistic vision. And they don't have those things. But they do, if there are patterns in the data, they learn and figure out those patterns. And one of the very powerful things about this new kind of machine intelligence is that these things can notice patterns that we haven't noticed. You know, that's why systems like AlphaGo, the Go-playing machine intelligence, can beat human players in ways that are really surprising to the human players. They notice patterns. They see things that that human players didn't.
So you're talking about, I mean, if we come back to the world of art, then you're talking about the capacity to create a new kind of art that humans could never dream up, because, I don't know, there's a different kind of logic when it comes to machine learning.
That's true. When we see some of the things that get generated or hallucinated by deep neural nets, you know, it's a really trippy and weird kind of art, and it's not something that I've seen any person paint. Yeah, it is new and different, sure. And it is its own in some sense, but I also don't want to overdo the sort of anthropomorphic argument. I mean, I'm you know, this is not the same as saying that they have consciousness. It's not the same as saying that they have an aesthetic principle. What I'm really saying is just that there are concepts that the system has learned that weren't programmed in, and the way those concepts get kind of, you know, refracted back, you know, is new. It's new because you know, these are not quite the same kinds of brains that we have. They don't have hands. They don't have the same kind of motor system that we do. And so it's expected, I think, that what's generated will look really different from you know, a human artist sketching with a pencil, say.
That's totally fascinating. I mean, you're saying we might have a totally new kind of art because of machine intelligence?
Yes, I'm sure that that's the case.
And this is, and now you've been talking about sort of collaborations between computers and humans, but what if we get rid of the humans here? I mean, after you know, the original programming is done, I mean, it's just this other generation of machine learning. You're talking about that.
Sure.
I mean, that in itself could create something amazing.
Sure. Yes. I think that's all entirely possible. I mean, I'm not worried about artists not having jobs anymore over the next few years. But I do think it's absolutely possible for things to be generated more autonomously or less autonomously. You know, and again, one can relate this to the way, you know, what it felt like to be a painter toward the end of the 19th century. I mean, painter is what it meant typically to be an artist. You know, and there were all these debates about, you know, if you're a photographer, are you a real artist? You know, is the camera doing all the work for you? And, you know, and I think there's similar kind of parallel conversations we could have here.
So has this stretched your own appreciation of art? I mean, have you seen, or I mean, I know that the technology is still in its infant stages, but have you seen some, I don't know, new kinds of art that you just sort of would never have dreamed of before that you really like?
Yes, I think it has. I mean, on the one hand, it's made me look back at Cubism and at some of the things that Francis Bacon does with sort of, you know, heads in multiple poses and so on, because we see a bunch of that sort of thing happening with hallucination from networks that are designed to recognize faces, for example. So, you know, it's part of it is about sort of thinking about art as an experimental lab for human perception. So it certainly made me rethink a lot of that kind of stuff.
Now, you mentioned Cubism, and if we go back to Picasso's breakthrough, it seems that, I mean, what he was doing was not only drawing on the history of art, but he was, you know, he suddenly was incorporating African masks. He had some sense, intuitive sense of new psychological theory and sort of the fragmentation of the human psyche and all of this stuff.
Yes.
It seemed like it came out of nowhere. I mean, he was obviously drawing on sort of cultural currents in the air. And I guess I'm wondering if computers can do that. I mean, to me, that's like real creativity there. It's like bringing together stuff that no one had put together before.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, his bringing in all of those other influences, whether from psychoanalysis, from African masks, that new stuff getting stirred into the pot is where the really interesting business comes from. I guess, and maybe this is a little controversial, but I have a, I'm not always crazy about the kind of great man theory of creativity. you know, I think we often impute genius, we impute agency where it doesn't always belong.
So even someone like Picasso, maybe he wasn't as original as he's cracked up to be?
Well, I'm not trying to diss Picasso. I mean, I think he's spectacular. I love Picasso, but I also think that you know, this idea of, you know, oh my God, it came from nowhere. You know, it's genius and so on. I think that's a little bit trivializing and simplifying out some of the more interesting things about what was going on. You know, it was special partly because of his exposure to those things and the fact that he was bringing them to the European Academe for the first time. Could computer art or, you know, art generated by machines do similar things? Sure. I mean, we're mixing in alien stuff in the same sense that African masks were alien to Europe in a lot of those kinds of ways, just by virtue of aiming some of these algorithms at training data that might be non-traditional. We're already doing that.
Where do you see all this going? I mean, what's the future of artificial creativity?
I'd be very surprised if, you know, if in 20 years we don't have art that everybody acknowledges, you know, that you know, by that point it'll be normalized enough that even the critics, you know, will think about this kind of stuff as mainstream, and there will be great art that uses these kinds of techniques just as a matter of course. And we won't even think about it as, you know, as computer art as such, I don't think.
Will we have a new kind of Turing test, you know, was it created by a computer or not?
Well, I think that more fundamentally, the question is flawed, because whenever art is created, it's always created by some kind of hybrid between what we think of as people and what we think of as technology. When I use paintbrushes, when I use a camera, when I use Photoshop, you know, this is technology, and it's not separate from us. You know, we are a technological species. Your body and my body are both covered in clothes. You know, if you strip all of that away, and you know, and we are, I don't know, naked, you know, in the wilderness, we are less than the humans that we are right now in a lot of ways.
Right.
So
I mean, to some degree, the advances of human civilization, which includes human creativity, is because of the way we've been able to use technology.
Entirely technologically mediated. Right. Maybe, you know, dancing naked might be the only form of creative output that isn't technologically mediated in some way.
Will there always be some kinds of human creativity that computers will never be able to do?
No. I think that anytime one says yes to a question like that, it almost feels like waving a red flag in front of the bull of future history.
You know? Especially for someone like you. You know, you don't want to say, no, that's impossible.
Right. You really risk making a, you know, why would anybody need more than 64 kilobytes statement.
So even the great novel, I don't know, War and Peace, you know, the great epic novel that seems to express something timeless about about human nature. Yes. You're saying computers in the future will be able to write those?
I think it's like asking, will you ever be able to take a picture that looks like a Caravaggio? The answer is yes. You know, if you set up a studio very carefully, or you, for that matter, you use Photoshop or something to, you know, synthesize brush strokes that look realistic, right? Then you can set up, you know, a photographic situation in a studio that takes a picture that looks like a Caravaggio. Doesn't diminish Caravaggio, and it doesn't diminish modern painting. But I, you know, I'm not sure the question is even interesting, if that makes sense.
Sorry, I guess I'm trying to hold on to some shred of human originality here, and you're kind of blowing that idea out of the water.
Well, I'm not that into human exceptionalism, I suppose. You know, I'm not sure that I buy it, and I think that our investing a lot of our identity in this idea of being exceptional relative to our machines is that seems like shifting sands, and it seems. Like it's in a way denying what is most interesting about our humanity, which is our ability to shape our environment and to grow in ways that, you know, exceed the capabilities of our own body, you know, collectively, individually. You know, why are we so invested in that?
Well, this is totally fascinating and kind of mind-blowing, I have to say. Thank you.
Great. My pleasure.
Blaise Aguera y Arcas leads Google's Machine Intelligence Group in Seattle. Steve Paulson talked with him.